Good morning. This is Brass Tacks Sunday, the 31st of January, 2021. I have the pleasure of being with you once again on a Sunday. The last time I was with you on a Sunday, I believe, was the first Sunday of the month. And now I have the pleasure of being here the last Sunday of the month. Today, we have quite an interesting topic to discuss. We are going to look at the new U.S. presidency and its implications for the Caribbean in a COVID-19 era. Now, I know some people may be wondering, why would we talk about a thing like this when we are on the verge of going into what is being called a national pause, lockdown number two, and we have had some press conferences to tell us about how this will work and what it will mean for us in Barbados over the next 2 weeks. My thinking here is that we place this in a wider context. We know what is happening in Barbados, but we, although we are an island, we are not isolated from the rest of the world. The United States of America is very significant in the world as well as in this hemisphere. So I thought we should discuss what the shift in the presidency in the United States of America might mean for us here in the region in general, and in particular in a COVID-19 era where we all have to cope with what COVID-19 means for our relationships with other states, and also what it means for us here on the ground. Are we able to fight COVID-19 on our own? Does the United States of America have a role in this? So today, in addition to being here with my able and wonderful producer, Mr. Dennis Johnson, I have a panel comprising Dr. Wendy Grenade. She is the head of Department of Government, Sociology, Social Work, and Psychology at the University of the West Indies Cave Hill campus. She will tell you a bit about herself, but she is an expert in comparative politics and regional integration, among other things. She's also done some work on global health security. We also have Mr. Mohamed Degye. He is a former Foreign Service officer and diplomat, previously for the Barbados government, and I really look forward to his insights, as I believe he's currently also resident in the United States of America. So this also provides us with some diaspora context as well, which I believe for Barbados should be important for us, because Barbadians, Caribbean people, are not just located on the rock or rocks, but abroad as well. We also have Miss Alicia Nichols. She is a trade researcher, also at the University of the West Indies Cave Hill campus, and an avid follower, I am told, of US politics, the presidential elections, and I also read she wrote two quite interesting articles in 2016, 2017, when Donald Trump came to office in the United States of America regarding the significance and the potential implications of this presidency for Barbados and the Caribbean. So I think we have some very good panelists here, very knowledgeable individuals, and I would like to open the floor to them to each introduce themselves and give us any opening thoughts that you may have. I would like to start with Dr. Wendy Grenade. So Dr. Grenade, go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Hines. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this panel. Good morning, Barbados, to our listeners here and abroad. And good morning to my fellow panelists and to our producer, Mr. Dennis Johnson. As Dr. Hines said, I'm Wendy Grenade. I am a senior lecturer in political science. My research interests around regionalism, comparative politics, and multidimensional security threats. Now, this program is being held at a most challenging time for Barbados, the rest of the Caribbean, and indeed the world. Many of us may be feeling very anxious about the uncertainty that surrounds us. Some of you may be joining us from quarantine or from isolation. Others may be waiting results of a COVID-19 test, and you feel fearful. You may be listening with serious concerns about your livelihood. How will you survive if you have to close this small shop? After all, it is your only source of income. Will you be able to keep the internet package to allow your children to access classes? You may be a frontline worker listening to us this morning, sacrificing every day to save lives at home, but preoccupied with keeping your own family safe as well. These are indeed challenging times for us here in Barbados, the rest of the Caribbean and the world. The current moment, I sure we would all agree, is by far the most defining in modern history. The global community is engulfed in three major crises, I think, and they must be confronted simultaneously. We are focusing on COVID-19 today, but of course, there are implications for the global economy, and the climate crisis is not going away. I think the moment presents an opportunity for us to reflect about how we live, what it means to be human, how should communities coexist, how should states relate to one another in a very complex, uncertain world. And I think, as I close my opening statement, that leadership is very important at every level, the global level, the regional level, and at the national level. In fact, I am of the view that competent, humane global leadership is an antidote in the fight against COVID-19. And what I mean by that, I think decisive leadership that balances science, common sense, judgment, and instinct in a very, very fluid situation. And I think an antidote against COVID-19 is leadership that comes from a place of humanness, grounded in principle, ethics, social justice, and cultural sensitivity. So as we discuss the United States and the Caribbean in the context of COVID-19, I think wherever you are, it matters, because the world is very interconnected, and what happens in one place would have direct or indirect implications for us where we are. So that's my opening statement, Dr. Hines.
Thank you so much for that, Dr. Grenade. Very well put and eloquent as always. Mr. Daguerre, would you tell us a bit about yourself? I know you are a former Foreign Service officer, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you are doing now and give us your perspective from where you sit.
Right. Good morning, Dr. Hines, fellow panelists and listeners, and Mr. Johnson. Dr. Hines, thank you for inviting me to participate. It is a distinct honor to sit alongside such an esteemed set of experts, and I look forward to a fruitful discussion this morning. A bit about me, I have a degree in international relations and a master's in international studies. I spent 15 years working as a career diplomat for Barbados, so I have both an academic and practical background in foreign policy. Since leaving the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I've been providing consulting services, and I have lived in Charleston, South Carolina, and now I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and as I look through the window, it is snowing. Some of you may know me from my Tuesday Nation column, Speaking My Mind. I agree with Dr. Grenade that we live in an interconnected, interdependent world, and for small states like Barbados, the international approach is obviously of paramount importance. I don't think there's a yes or no or a black and white answer to the question of the U.S. and the global response to COVID-19 and Barbados and the Caribbean. I think it is much more nuanced and has to be placed in context. First, within the broader prism of U.S. foreign policy and U.S. Caribbean, U.S. Barbados relationship, that but takes a lot of time to scrutinize, so we can probably touch on a few points about that during the discussions later. But specifically concerning COVID and the global pandemic, we have to recognize the U.S. domestic situation. It's incontrovertible that not only did the Trump administration do a pitiful job with handling COVID, but they willfully chose a destructive path. The new administration is therefore starting off on a severely compromised foundation, and before COVID, the U.S. healthcare system was fundamentally flawed. So Biden and his people are faced with a daunting domestic task, And even though he has made a lot of pronouncements, it will be difficult for the administration to realize significant progress, especially in the short term. Already, I read a few reports news stories this weekend about vaccine shortages, bungled distributions, there are cases of vaccines disappearing. So the situation is quite chaotic. And the pandemic is a global phenomenon, and small states like Barbados espouse the position repeatedly that issues of such magnitude with wide-ranging impacts must be dealt with at an international level. Barbados and the Caribbean stress the importance of the multilateral process, which is supposed to afford us a semblance of a voice, a place at the table. So theoretically, the U.S. rejoining World Health Organization immediately upon Biden's inauguration and announcing its participation in the COVAX scheme is important. It means that the superpower, which is one of the worst affected countries by COVID, is eschewing insularity and embracing a collective approach. It means also that the loss of funding from Trump's withdrawal will be renewed. But we also have to take into consideration that the fact that during the pandemic, multilateralism as a whole has been set aside quite often in favor of narrow national responses. It's been a mixed bag where we see cooperation in areas such as research and travel juxtaposed with national level responses on economic and public health policies. And furthermore, this enthusiasm about the US re-entry into the WHO, etc., must be tempered. Sentiments about internationalism aside, the new administration will be focusing on its domestic situation. It has a lot on its hands besides COVID, and the political climate in the country remains highly fraught. So, and focusing on the domestic situation involves vaccines for the U.S. population. That is what is being pushed here in the U.S. So the U.S., like other rich countries, will not shy away from securing what it needs first. I've seen the term vaccine apartheid being employed now to describe how countries in the U.S. are ordering huge volumes of vaccines with the intention of stockpiling. So if all rich countries act like this, and they are doing this, right, where does that leave the rest of the world? And the COVAX scheme, which is supposed to address these disparities, has yet to distribute a single vaccine, and it is extremely far away from its funding goal. We must also remember that whether the Democrats or Republicans are in power, the overall U.S. position on pharmaceutical drugs is from a profit-making perspective in which the supposed rights of corporations are foremost and have to be protected. So the notion of vaccines as a global public good, which we will posit, and which some nations will posit, is not necessarily something which the U.S. agrees with. And then,
Mr. Daguerre, can we come back to some of these points? Because I would like us to go a little bit deeper into that whole notion of vaccine distribution, what the United States re-entry into the World Health Organization might mean, even the National Vaccine Campaign, what it may mean for the world. Because even while it is something that is within the domestic space of the United States of America, it may also have some implications for the wider world. So I would like us just to pause on that a second so that we don't do everything right now at the beginning.
Right.
So thank you.
Sorry about that. Sorry about that. I got carried a bit. Yeah, I was just about to conclude though, but sorry about that.
Go ahead. Well, let's bring in Ms. Nichols. Do you all mind if we go by first name basis after we do the introductory round?
Of course not.
Okay, so we'll bring in Ms. Alicia Nichols to give her introductory perspective. And just for the callers, for the listeners, remember the number that you can call is 434-1790 if you would like to get in on this conversation. And you can also send us messages via WhatsApp at 266-4862. Ms. Nichols, go ahead.
Well, good morning, everyone listening. Thank you, Madam Moderator, Dr. Hines, producer, Mr. Johnson, fellow panelists and listeners. Thank you very much for the kind invitation. Very excited about what is a very important and pertinent discussion for us in the region. As you rightly said, my name is Alicia Nichols. I'm a trade policy specialist currently based at the University of the West Indies. And just to say a little bit about my background, it's quite multidisciplinary, spanning political science, trade, and law. Those are the specialties I've been trained in. So my research draws a lot from those disciplines. A lot of my academic focus at the moment is on investment law and policy, international business, World Trade Organization issues, and of course, I have particular interest in U.S.-Caribbean trade and investment relations. Just quickly, because I know, Dr. Hines, that you want us to get into the meat of the matter, but just for me to say that I would like to endorse what my learned fellow panelists have said. Global leadership and multilateralism are important, especially in a world that's so interdependent, whether it's through trade, migration, tourism. And with respect to a virus that really is no respecter of boundaries or nationality. So just my opening shot is that we have to care what happens in the U.S., not just because the U.S. is, because of the U.S.'s hegemonic status in the global political economy, but also it's the Caribbean's major trading partner, major tourism source market. It's where the majority of our welcome stamp applicants have come from. It's home to the largest Caribbean diaspora. So we have a vested interest, both from an economic and social perspective in and political perspective in what happens in the USA and their approach to dealing with the virus multilaterally. So I look forward to unpacking these issues further with you, Dr. Hines, and fellow panelists and listeners as we go through the duration of the discussion.
Thank you all for your introductions. Now, as I mentioned, we will get back to some of these matters that you all touched on in your opening. There is a quote that I found, though, that I would like to share with you, panelists, as well as our listeners. And this is from joebiden.com. This was the Biden-Harris campaigning website that they used. And I thought it was quite interesting. And I'll just put it out there and then say a little bit about it. And this is from Joe Biden. And he says, remember, this was in the campaigning period. The world does not organize itself. American leadership, backed by clear goals and sound strategies, is necessary to effectively address the defining global challenges of our time. And what Biden was making reference to in particular, COVID-19, he was making reference also to climate change and some other significant global concerns, which may not necessarily detain us so much in Barbados and the Caribbean, things such as nuclear proliferation and other security measures. The implication of this, I would believe, is also that President Biden, now President Biden, is saying that the world was rudderless previously under the Trump administration, and some of this was attributed to what we see in the spread and perhaps the difficulties in handling the COVID-19 pandemic. This said, I would like to ask you panelists, do you think that this shift to the Biden administration will provide some better kind of global guidance and direction in addressing the pandemic that can positively affect us? Or do you think that this is just some rhetoric?
May I?
Yes, Dr. Grenade, go ahead.
Yes, I want to agree with what some of my panelists were saying earlier, because I think when we look at U.S. foreign policy, there are some constants. The United States conducts its foreign policy in the context of a capitalist world economy with unequal power relations, and that won't change. The United States also conducts its foreign policy undergirded by its vital strategic interests, its geostrategic interests, its geopolitical interests. Now, it doesn't matter who governs, because leaders bring their own unique traits to the governance process. But that being said, the quote you read, Dr. Hines.
Please, let's go by first names. You can call me Christina, so we can have an easier flowing conversation.
No problem at all. No problem at all. I want to also read another quote because we want to be able to put U.S. foreign policy in context as we think about COVID. And we want to ask in terms of continuity and change. This is a quote from Robert Cox. You know him well, that Canadian scholar. He said, successive dominant powers in the international system have shaped a world order that suits their interests. And they have done so not only as a result of their coercive capabilities, but also because they have managed to generate broad consent for that order, even among those who are disadvantaged by it. End of quote. Now, we understand how the world is ordered, how it's configured. And I think the question we have to ask is not so much what the Biden-Harris administration may mean for the world, but what do we do as Caribbean countries, as Caribbean people, to take advantage of perhaps small openings, to take advantage, to make sure we are at the table, however it's possible, helping to set the rules, helping with global agenda setting. I think we have to be thinking strategically about collective diplomacy in terms of Caribbean countries leveraging their 14 votes. There's a lot more work we have to do in hemispheric fora, like in the OAS. So for me, it's not so much what the Biden-Harris administration may do, and Mohammed is very right. They would be very preoccupied with domestic issues, dealing with the Senate, dealing with the House, dealing with a hostile domestic environment, and dealing with multiple crises. So we have to be very cautious and temper our expectations. But even as we try to understand what may be new, and I think we can find common ground around COVID, because the severity and the intensity of the pandemic creates an incentive for powerful countries and not as powerful countries to find common ground around solutions. So there may be an opening for a more kind of humane governance, but we have to temper that expectation with the realities about U.S. foreign policy and the United States' interest in the world, its manifest destiny, its perception about its exceptionalism. These things won't go away. Even as we are seeing, we can say President Trump had a doctrine of withdrawal. President Biden perhaps is having a doctrine of re-engagement with the world, but he has to rebuild trust among allies. He has to deal with very serious domestic crises. And we have to ask ourselves, how do we find the space to engage? Not so much what he would do, but how do we take advantage of the opportunity that may present itself to create a kind of new narrative around the things that are important to small island states?
So what you're saying here is that we are the ones that have to take advantage, or to use this moment when there is a new U.S. presidency to see what we can get out of it for our own benefit, whether this is dealing with COVID-19 or any other area.
Yeah, whether it's climate change, whether it's COVID-19, whether it's security, we have no control over the Biden-Harris administration and their agenda.
True.
What we have control over is how we look for openings and opportunities for engagement, whether it's strengthening our lobbying with the Congressional Black Caucus, whether working through different Caribbean American associations. We have to find new ways to engage in strategic diplomacy. At different levels, at the state level, engaging with non-state actors, but we have to see it as an opening. You know, there is a framework that looks at U.S. foreign policy. Bruce Gentleson is the name of the gentleman for the students who may be listening. And he says there, when you want to analyze U.S. foreign policy, think about four P's: power, principles, peace, and prosperity. And he argues that in any one foreign policy decision, you can't utilize all the P's. So he says, for example, Reagan utilized power and prosperity, and Carter would have utilized peace and principles. We don't know yet the mix that President Biden would use. But given his historical record relative to former President Trump, we can say, okay, we may see a more humane environment in terms of the multilateral. And Mohammed already spoke about COVAX and the United States re-engaging the WHO and so forth and so on. And that's important because multilateralism is necessary for small states. This is where we get to be at the table. This is where we get to help set the rules. This is where we get to negotiate and dialogue and use our 14 votes as leverage. So multilateralism becomes for us a weapon.
And just to be clear for everyone, when we're talking about multilateralism here, we are talking about states, so this is the countries of the world, engaging with each other in cooperative fora and arrangements. Just to be clear that we're not using any jargon that people may not understand, right? Okay, thank you so much for that, Dr. Grenade. Let's hear if the others want to come in on any of these points. I said we would call each other first names, Wendy, Dr. Grenade, that you've made. Yes, go ahead, Mohammed.
Thanks for sharing that quote from Robert Cox, Dr. Grenade. It encapsulates perfectly U.S. how the U.S. Behaves in the international community. Whether it is Democrats or Republicans in power, U.S. geopolitical interests and economic interests dictate how the administration behaves. And so while we saw some extremities on the part of the Trump administration, and the Biden administration is projecting much more friendlier sentiments about unity and internationalism, and they've made some overtures to reverse what Trump did. The fact remains that they will act just as the U.S. traditionally acts. So it is not all, even when there's an internationalist type approach, it is internationalism in the interests of the U.S. So right. The international order must suit the purposes of the rich and the powerful. That is the nature of the international order. It is from a practical perspective, we have to recognize this, not be seduced by it, but work with what we have, and take advantage of where we can. We tend to see U.S. politics in very large terms, within the executive realm, but there's a Congress, there's a Senate, there are states, local places where the diaspora are heavily represented. We need to take advantage of different fora, different approaches. Instead of just seeing the U.S. as the executive level and a president and a vice president.
Thank you so much. That's a very important intervention, I believe, as well. I remember, it must have been last week or the week before, when I was on this program, not on the Sunday, during the week, I was in a little bit of an interchange with one of the callers, or maybe it was one of the WhatsAppers, about whether what happened in the U.S. on January 6th was an attempted coup. And the individual was noting that, well, it can't be an attempted coup because at that point in time, Donald Trump was still the president. And I was trying to make the broader point, which is that although he's the president, he does not constitute the entirety of the government because there are these other arms that are very important within the U.S. system. But so that is a very important intervention to make, that the presidency is not all. I want to let you know also, Mohammed, you have a fan who says you're a great writer and you have a large following. You're an eloquent and enlightening you have eloquent and enlightening discourse, and we need more people like you on the program. So There you have your fan. Alicia, is there anything that you would like to say on this? And there's also a very interesting point here about vaccines that I will return to. Go ahead, Alicia.
Sure. Thank you, Dr. Hines. And thanks. Sorry, Christina.
It's fine. That feels so weird.
Okay. Okay, Dr. Hines. Okay. Thank you for that quote, Dr. Hines. And I agree with Dr. Grenade's sentiments and Mr. Degas as well, that we have to temper our expectations of the Biden-Harris administration. I know that there hasn't been much jubilation in the Caribbean, for instance, that Vice President Kamala Harris is part Jamaican. But as we all know, at the end of the day, their focus is going to be on fighting foremost several domestic fires currently raging there, whether it's the rise in domestic terrorism, COVID-19, you know, the economic situation, what have you. But there have been some positive signals. And one of them, of course, is a seeming return to a more multilateral approach to several things, including tackling the COVID-19 pandemic. And this is important because, as the head of the WHO, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, said, we'll not end the pandemic anywhere until we end it everywhere. So there's a need for a multilateral approach, whether it is through sharing of information, vaccine access. I would like to speak to that a little bit later on, because as most of you would know, the situation is that a lot of developed countries are hoarding the vaccines for themselves, in some cases buying sometimes twice, three times, even five times the amount of vaccines that they need to vaccinate their own population. That's whereas right. Many developing countries don't even have access to a vaccine as yet.